This is a recording of the American Friends Service Committee monthly donor call and program update from October 13, 2011, with General Secretary Shan Creighton and New Hampshire Program Coordinator Arnie Alpert. They discussed AFSC's work for economic justice, the federal budget, the cost of 10 years of war, and the growing protest movement around the U.S.
I want to welcome you all on behalf of everybody here at AFSC and really thank you for your generous support. So this is an experiment today to offer our donors, old and new, a chance to learn a little bit more about AFSC's work by talking directly to some of the staff who are on the front line. For those of you who are new to our community, I'd like to say that the American Friends Service Committee is a Quaker organization. We were founded in 1917, and we've been working since then for a world in which all people can live in peace. Most important, we recognize that peace requires more than the absence of war and violence. And we understand that as we work for peace, we need to be ready to work for just social and economic conditions, because that's what's really necessary to have peace and security in our world. Talking today, close to the 10th anniversary of the war in Afghanistan. And this is an example of a war that is fought in the name of security, but really doesn't bring us security and peace. Instead, we live in a climate of increasing fear. It's encouraged Islamophobia, fear of immigrants of all stripe, and it really has left us with the sense that we are in an endless war on terror. AFSC sees our work here in this country as working to stop that war, to end this reliance on force and violence, and to try to redirect some of the monies that we have wasted in this effort. We've spent $1 trillion on war, and in the course of doing that, we've failed to invest in our own country, in our education, in our health, in building a sustainable economy. The other thing that we haven't invested in is the kind of work overseas that actually could build the capacity for world peace. And one of the things that AFSC has done, in addition to trying to work to redirect our national priorities, is to demonstrate in the work that we do all around the world what the possibilities are for building programs that really build a future that has the capacity for peace, even in the most war-torn environments. And I would like to tell you just a little bit. I spent August visiting our programs in the Middle East and Africa. And one of the most impressive pieces of work that we've been doing in Palestine, in Gaza and the West Bank, is working with young Palestinians, high school age and college age youth, in what we call the Palestine Youth Program. It's based on the popular achievement model that was developed at the University of Minnesota as a way of helping young people learn about the ways that they can have an impact in their own communities to make their lives better. And since 2003, more than 4,000 high school-age Palestinians and more than 300 college-age Palestinians have been a part of this work. The college-age students act as mentors to the young people who learn about the power of communication, who learn about the power of nonviolent witness, and who learn how to become engaged in their communities. One of the programs that I visited with was a group of junior high school and high school age young Palestinian boys who had found in their neighborhood a family now too old to farm a small plot of land that they had available. And these young men took it upon themselves to farm that plot, to bring the water in, which had to be carried in, to plant and to weed and to prepare the ground so that this couple in their neighborhood would be able to eat. And in doing that, they really asserted their own ability to make a difference in their lives. And so this kind of work, this kind of program is the opportunities that we miss in this country when we spend our efforts on war instead of on investing in the development of young people to be the peacemakers of the future in a place like Gaza. A really important part of what we've done in the last 10 years has been to look at what's going on in this country and try to redirect some of our resources towards national needs. And I'd like to turn over the conversation now to Arne Alpert, who's been leading some of our work on economic justice here, to tell us a little bit about what he's been up to.
Great. Thanks, Shan, and thanks, everybody, for being there today. I'm sitting at my desk in Concord, New Hampshire, while the other folks are in Philadelphia, and I've been the New Hampshire program coordinator here for 30 years now. But for the past year, I've also been able to help out on a part-time basis as coordinator of our economic justice work in the United States, in addition to working with local economic justice programs scattered across the country. I've also been able to help out in a larger project that takes the energy of local staff, but also brings it together with people at our central office in Philadelphia and our small policy office in Washington, D.C., to figure out how we can work together to have some impact on the United States government, especially on issues that have to do with the federal budget. And if you think about it, it's really the federal budget has dominated the debates in Washington going back to the election last November, whether they're talking about the debt ceiling or appropriations bills or authorizations or whatever else is going on. It seems to keep coming back to this question of the budget, and now it's largely focused on this question of what to do about the deficit. And we are in a very interesting position because we are well known, of course, as an organization that's working for peace and against militarism, but we also have a lot of programs that are focused on issues of human needs in their communities. And this is an area where there's those two sets of concerns come together so closely, and it's actually a little bit unusual because most of our partner groups tend to work on either one set of issues or the other set of issues. One of the unique things that the service committee brings into this is that we are looking at this as a matter of both of these sets of issues. I think I can say that we have been putting out a pretty consistent message for the past year, and it starts by saying that if we need to reduce the deficit, we should be looking at what caused it. And it wasn't excessive government spending that caused the deficit. The deficit was, the deficit was caused by the wars and by the doubling of military spending over the last decade. The deficit was caused by tax cuts, and the deficit was also induced by the recession itself. The recession wasn't caused by the deficit. The deficit is caused by the recession. Trying to keep people thinking about that, thinking clearly, is part of what we've been trying to do. And then that leads directly into what we have to say should be done in this current environment where the deficit is the focus. And that starts with the need for substantial cuts in military or war spending. A lot of you have probably seen our 1 Minute for Peace brochure, which Mark was instrumental in designing, and that shows that more than 50% of our discretionary federal budget right now is going into the military. We are spending almost as much on our military programs as the entire rest of the world combined, and obviously, if we're going to make any serious effort to reduce the deficit, cutting military spending has to be a serious part of that program. So that's point number one. Point number two is that we cannot afford, from a moral perspective, to cut the deficit by cutting the legs out from under programs that are designed to help the people who are most vulnerable among us, programs like Medicaid or subsidized housing, non-military foreign aid that goes around the world. These are programs that people depend on, and in the long world, that's really where our security comes from, is helping people in those situations. The third point we want to make, which I think is familiar to people, is that the government does need to increase revenue, and it can do that by getting rid of the tax breaks that the wealthiest among us have benefited from in recent years. And then the final point is that the long-term fiscal health of our country and of our government requires that we get people back to work. So that's something that we're also joining the calls for, short-term investment in job creation in order to have longer-term fiscal prosperity. I think I maybe would like to stop for a second, Mark, and see if people have questions, but I'd love to also, if people are interested, to talk about how the AFSC is picking up on this current movement that's popping up all over the country that started on Wall Street, and we're now seeing springing up in parks and squares and streets from Seattle down to Greensboro, North Carolina, New Orleans, and even here in New Hampshire.
So we're about to unmute everybody.
The conference has been unmuted.
And so if anybody would like to ask a question right now to either Shan or Arnie, and then please do so.
Yeah. And I realize I didn't say much about what we're actually doing. I talked about the issues, but I'd also be glad to talk about some of the specific actions that we're taking.
Are there any questions at this point? Go in a little bit more to what we're doing and what you're seeing.
I mean, we do have staff scattered around the country, so we've been able to do a lot of local education with partner groups. We've got in some communities people working to bring the issues of the federal budget to their local city councils, for example, as resolutions. We have people working in Washington with other faith-based advocacy groups. We have a team that's called Wage Peace. We've got a large email list, which any of you on the phone now can subscribe to and get regular alerts. We've been able to use. Mark, do you know how many people that goes out to when that goes out?
Between 50 and 60,000, I think.
Wow, I mean, that's a lot of people around the country that we're able to reach with very timely, specific information about actions that they can take. Now, a lot of that has focused on this question of the federal budget. We've created a very accessible toolkit called Move the Money Toolkit, which you can look at from our website at afsc.org, that gives a lot of background information and a lot of very specific, very practical things that you can do to get this message. It was interesting when you've probably heard about the super committee that's meeting now in Washington, and when that was formed with six senators, we immediately noticed that five of the six senators are in states where we've got an active AFSC program presence, or we have strong active volunteers there. So we quickly put together our own little AFSC super committee to focus on the super committee, and we've been meeting regularly to try to gear up local activities such as meetings with congressional aides, talking about having vigils, talking about getting letters to the editor, getting phone calls in to those congressional offices to make sure that these messages are getting through to these. And even if you are not in a district that has one of these super committee members, we know both that ultimately, if they do come up with a recommendation, it will come back to the full Congress, but that also the members of Congress themselves are probably the most effective lobbyists. And if they're talking to the super committee members and they say, hey, I'm hearing from my constituents that we really need to get a serious look at military spending, that's going to have some impact. In fact, I had a chat. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's now the chair of the Democratic National Committee, was up in Hanover, New Hampshire this week while the Republicans were debating, and I was able to slip into a meeting with her and have a short conversation about the importance of cutting military spending. So she said, well, I'm not on the committee, so I don't know what they're going to do, but I also know very well that she heard what I had to say.
Great. Thank you, Arnie.
Are there any questions at this point? Well, if not, I think I'd like to say something about a different type of work that we've done in the arena of economic justice. And actually, this goes back a long way in AFSC's history. Back in the 20s and 30s, we were asked to go into West Virginia when miners were being locked out to work with the families there to support them. And some of that work led us to begin to think about how we could help communities develop alternatives to their means of making their living. That is, not waiting for the big corporation or the mine to open up the jobs, but what is it the communities can do for themselves. And that work has continued today around the world, but it also happens here in the U.S. And we have a wonderful program in New Mexico that's about 4 years old now, where our staff person is actually the 2010 New Mexico Organic Farmer of the Year. And he has been working with a number of partners in that state to help traditional New Mexican families and Native Americans in New Mexico to train them to be organic farmers who can make a livelihood that will sustain a family of four with only 3 or 4 acres to be cultivated. Not only has he worked with training young people to become sustainable organic farmers, but he's also worked with the extension agencies in New Mexico to help have them refocus their support away from simply doing things that support agribusiness, but also looking at the things they could do experimentally to support small farmers. In addition, we've brought together the farmers who are working in community farms and backyard gardens and their own family plots and put them in a collective that's been able to have a contract with the Albuquerque Public Schools to provide locally grown, fresh, organic produce in the schools. So this is an example of taking a community, and New Mexico actually was the most food insecure state in the nation when we started this project. That means that there were more hungry people in New Mexico than anywhere else, and only 2% of the food in New Mexico was locally grown, despite the fact that there's a long history there of being able to grow using the sustainable methods that go back to Native American days, using the water that is available and getting 2 or 3 cycles of crops in the field every year. So that's an example here at home where we're doing that kind of work to create livelihoods. But we've also seen the power of doing that overseas. And we've got livelihood projects going on now in Cambodia. We've worked in Zimbabwe and in Burundi. And these are always tailored to the local community's needs. So in Zimbabwe, where we're working in a place called Hatcliffe Extension, that's a slum area, we've actually brought together a number of partners to train different groups, mostly young people and women in the slum, to be carpenters, welders, to make curtains and drapes and clothing, brick making. And together, these groups have found their own market right in Hatcliffe Extension, where families are beginning to build their own houses to get out of the shanties and lean-tos that they've been living in. And again, we've been able to help with pouring concrete foundations, and then the carpenters, the bricklayers, the welders are able to come in and make the door frames and the doors and the things that are needed to bring that community to life. And one of the wonderful things that happened there is through our contacts with some of the government agencies, we were able to bring the Zimbabwe's Small and Medium Enterprises Agency into partnership. And now the Hatcliffe Extension is in the process of building a factory shell that's going to allow them to do even bigger projects. And the ministry is helping them get into other countries nearby with some of the products and some of the services that they're able to provide. So we've got some experience in doing this, and what we see is not that we're going to provide 100,000 jobs around the world, but that we can demonstrate the feasibility of people in a community coming together to create their own livelihoods and their own jobs. And I think now as we're looking at what's going on in this country, it's more and more important for us to begin to support these kinds of efforts, especially in the communities that have been the poorest and the most disadvantaged. And under the direction that the country seems to be going now, are likely to even lose the meager supports that they have had. And I want to just say that it's through the support of donors like those of you who are on this call that we're able to continue this work and to use it to promote other work in other agencies that then builds on and expands what we do. I'll just mention that many years ago in the Central Valley of California, AFSC had a project in which we were helping farm workers build houses for themselves and each other. And that was spun off to be an independent group called Self-Help Enterprises. It's still going on in the Central Valley. But Self-Help Enterprises also became the model for Habitat for Humanity. So I think that the power of a demonstration project that starts in one community with just a few people is real, and we've seen it work before, and we're really grateful for your help in helping us make those kind of innovative programs visible to the rest of the world.
Thank you, Shan. We are very grateful for your help. And if you have any questions right now or want to make any comments, please do so. So I'm not hearing any right now, but I have a question for Arnie. You mentioned before the Occupy Wall Street,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering if you could give a little update about what's going on and what you see with the AFSC's role.
Well, it's interesting, and of course this whole thing is brand new. But because we've got staff and programs scattered all over the country in different communities, as this effort started to spread beyond New York a week ago Monday, it started popping up in all these other cities. We started having staff who were able to see what was going on and in many cases find ways that we could offer some support or assistance to this movement, right in Philadelphia, for example, where the occupation that's going on is just a couple blocks from the Friends Center. So the Friends Center itself has become a hospitality center for people. Our office in Atlanta is actually serving as a bit of a headquarters for what's going on there. I had an email a little bit ago from Ann Lennon, our staff person in Greensboro, North Carolina, and she's arranging to go out into the park this evening and have AFSC and Quaker volunteers providing nonviolence training to people who are doing the demonstrations there. In New Orleans, we've had staff people helping to do organizing. In San Francisco, we've got an exciting newspaper and website called Street Spirit, and they've been providing coverage of what's been going on there. Here in New Hampshire, I'm just helping people with a little bit of liaison because I've got contacts with members of the Board of Aldermen in Manchester, with some experienced civil rights attorneys, with members of the clergy. I was talking to a retired Episcopal bishop yesterday who was asking about it and telling me that he'd like to go down and be part of this demonstration. So that's an interesting type of thing. One of the ones I like the best is in New York City, where one of our staff people who works on prison-related issues has been going down to the park near Wall Street and doing small little workshops or teach-ins on issues that have to do with the privatization of prisons, or basically taking an enterprise for which private profit should not be the motivating force, but turning it over to profit-minded enterprises and what are all the associated problems that come with that. So it's great to have Lewis right out there in the streets, right in the thick of things where things that are going on, and have the AFSC being part of that. And what I think also is having AFSC being part of it is also something that can help these demonstrations stay focused, stay there with a good spirit, and keep their methods nonviolent, which from my perspective is probably the key to the long-term success of this new movement.
Thank you, Arnie.
I think we've been pretty excited here in Philadelphia to see the young people who are gathering, because I think that despite some of the critics that have said these are people who haven't got the answers, what they do have is a very clear picture that the problems we're in right now are not simple. They're complex. And there is a relationship between the kinds of foreign policies that we have pursued and some of the decisions we've made about investment here in the U.S., and that we really need to look at things like the roles that we've allowed corporations to play, giving them more and more rights to influence elections and public life, and reducing regulations that have really protected us against a kind of exploitation that goes on. So these young people really get it, that we live in a complicated world. And I think that the real critique ought to be with our public lawmakers, who have acted as though sound bites are enough to fix this recession that we have been in since 2008, and that they can make political points as opposed to actually trying to fix what's wrong with the country.
We do have some information on our website right now that includes some photos from some of these different things from around the world with a little bit of highlights. So that's right there on the front page at AFFE.org.
Yes. So are there any questions or any comments before we start wrapping up? Hearing none, I want to join with Arnie in encouraging you to visit AFSC.org, our wonderful website, where we have all the resources that Arnie talked about. And also you could subscribe for the Wage Peace email newsletter and other email newsletters that we have. Also, if you have any questions that occur to you later today, please email us at ask@AFSC.org, and we'll make sure we promptly get your questions answered. And thank you very much for your support, and thank you for joining us today.
I want to thank you one last time, to say that if you also have reactions to the call, that you'd just like to give us your feedback, we'd love to have that. This is an experiment. We're doing it for the first time. So we want to hear from you and know what was good about this or not so good, and how we might do this better if we decide to do it again in the future. So thank you for being willing to be with us on this first time out, and we hope that we'll hear from you, and hope that you'll continue to hold us in your prayers, and we really welcome your support.
All right. Thank you, and have a good afternoon or morning or whatever time of day it is where you are. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.